aircraft from the air will join others from around the world. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interests. Perhaps space today is the 4th of July, and you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live. It should be today. The 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday. It's the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not perish in the fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive.
And welcome everyone to your Monday Morning Manners in Blog Talk Radio. Well, this is Rick Brady. I'm certainly glad that you are here again with us on a very fine Tuesday. We are simply going to be broadcasting the best as we can. We are doing it without a phone this time. We are trying something else. We have decided that we're going to have to recommend some new radio show. So let's see what we can do. We're going to bring everybody into the house if we can. So we will talk to you as soon as we can. Our engineers are in here and they're talking or listening or looking at the phone, and I'll get on the phone in a moment. Right now I'm directly plugged in, so I think we're going to be okay. So I do appreciate it, and we certainly will try something in a little bit. I believe that Todd Mark looks like he may be on the phone, and I'm going to be bringing him in today. But let me tell you a little bit about Independence Day today. Certainly everyone knows that it marks the separation of some kind of ruling authority in the United States of America. It is July 4th when the colonists declared independence from the Kingdom of Great Britain. Today, July 7th, is the Solomon Islands celebration of Independence Day from the United Kingdom in 1978. And around the planet, 184 countries celebrate an Independence Day. So the real question for our show today is, when is your Independence Day? When is your celebration from the separation from a ruling authority of debt? And how are you going to get a handle on that, and how are you going to get out of debt? So that's what we're going to play with a little bit today, and we will bring certainly Todd Mark in here so that he can join our show. And I saw that a 214 number came up, and so that was probably him, even though he didn't have his digital paw in the air.
Hey there, Rick. How are you?
And how are you? And happy 4th of July.
Hey, happy 4th of July and a couple of days after yourself. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm sitting here listening to the quality of the air broadcast, and it's not all that bad.
No, it's not at all.
You probably got to jump a little bit in the cell.
I'm sorry?
You probably got your cell phone jumping a little bit in a cell somewhere along the line.
Probably. I'm driving through the beautiful Dallas, Fort Worth. It's been a great week as I was traveling to New Jersey and I met with several financial institutions talking about what they're going to be doing to support financial capability. Sadly, I don't have a number for it just yet. I'm working on it. But Rick, you're right. I always like to look at this time. This is a great time for us to look at declaring independence from debt and the halfway point of the year. So it's also a time when a lot of folks do their mid-year review on their budget, and they say, well, I budgeted, set some financial goals, and now you can say, are you on track? And if you're able to accomplish those things, fantastic. If you haven't, now's a great time for a course correction and saying, what can you do to make sure if it's saving up money for a down payment on a house or supersizing their retirement investments or starting a 529 for somebody going back to college, or maybe starting a business. But whatever it is, this is your halfway point. This is not a time to say, oh, I haven't done well this year. I should give up and try again in 2016. This is where you declare independence, not just against debt, but saying my money is for my goals. And if I haven't done with it as I want in the first 6 months of the year, I'm now going to seize the day. And I am to declare I'm spending the money on me. I'm paying myself first, and I'm working toward my goals.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love it if we've got other listeners that want to dial in.
They want to dial in and talk about
Yep, and I think that it's going to be very, very important for people as we move forward. We certainly have seen some issues over in Europe and primarily in Greece, where there, as a country, have continued to borrow and borrow and borrow and borrow, and unfortunately, not having as much money as they would like to have to be able to pay back even the interest on the debt, much less any portion of the principal of the debt. And that's where people can get into trouble. I mean, here's a whole country that continued to borrow well past their means, and means measured for a country is their gross domestic product. And so when you're up near 200% of your gross domestic product, that basically says that you have outspent your earning possibilities by over double of what you actually make. You know, for an individual, let's say that you're making $50,000, you basically have borrowed to the extent of $100,000, and that's the debt that you have to pay back. That's where Greece is today. And so let it be an example of what it can do, because there are ripple effects as Greece certainly has their issue of trying to pay back a debt and trying to renegotiate with creditors and try to give them maybe a sense of comfort that somewhere along the line they will pay back the principal, if not the interest on the money that they have borrowed, if they pay back anything at all. At the end of today, we probably will know whether or not they're reaching any kind of accord, or whether Greece is just going to go off by themselves and basically say, I'm not going to pay back any of my debt, period. And then, you end up in a world court situation of trying to claim some money out of Greece to pay back the debt. But the rolling effect of that will be into the European Union and into people that have invested, like the United States, into the European Union. They have invested money into that, and they're going to come up short as well. Well, as a person, if you're earning $50,000 and you have borrowed to the extent that you now owe $100,000 today, that's when it's all due, you know that there's no way that you can possibly pay that back today. You would go in and try to work with your creditors to extend some terms or get better terms, and then determine, are you going to go into some form of bankruptcy in order to be able to pay off all of the debt that you've now accumulated. The rolling effect of that, of course, is that that money was lent out by an institution. They no longer can get that money back into the institution, so they take a loss, the investors take a loss, and that's how it rolls back into society. So thus is the reason that if you borrow well beyond your means and then you decide that you want to go out and buy something more, basically use credit to buy that something more, then people are going to turn you down because they're going to take a look at your FICO score and say, there's no way that I can lend this person any money. And that's what can happen.
Rick, I want to spend a lot of time today talking about the ramifications of spending beyond your means. and my phone away from me.
And they please answer the
I use every
that was down there, and we certainly saw a lot of pictures of that devastation. But when it takes out the infrastructure, which is basically your electrical power and your communications capabilities, what was discovered was, of course, is that the financial institutions could not operate because they were used to operating with communication lines and electrical power. Both of those were out, so their computers were down. And the ATM network was down, so there was no way of going to an ATM and getting it to work, because it had no power. And it also, if it had power, couldn't communicate back to anything that would say how much money you had or didn't have. So we saw the coast for several weeks go into a cash mode, back into a cash mode. Like prior to the invention of the credit card or any kind of instant loan. And it can be a pretty scary time if you haven't planned for that. So, get out of debt and having some kind of Independence Day or feeling of freedom really does mean that, yes, I have funds at the financial institution, but I might have a couple hundred dollars stashed away at home someplace. I really never touch it. It just sits there in some cookie jar in the back of the shelf, but it's there in case everything goes away for some strange reason. At least I have something that I can go and barter with in order to get some food. And it's,
I'm going to try to read down the numbers.
Not a problem. And we will certainly bring Todd Mark back in when he is capable of dialing in and has a better connection. But for all of you that would like to dial in and talk with us on the radio show, here's our way of doing it. Give us a call at 646-929-1020, 646-929-1020. I will see your phone pop up on the studio window, and by popping it up on the studio window, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can do that. And just like Todd Mark calling in from outside of the building, I can open up a microphone and you can get involved in the conversation. If you don't have that capability or you don't want to talk on the radio, the chat window is also open, and that certainly is on the Internet. We can see the chat window operating, and I can go into the chat window really at any time and take a look, see who's there. I can read your questions or I can read your comments, and we can bring you up on to the air. Now, the way that you can get to the chat window is to go to blogtalkradio.com/money_matters. That's blogtalkradio.com, and that's the slash, the one that leans to the right. Money_matters. And you will see on that page, that's our webpage on Blog Talk Radio, you will see on that page the chat room button. And if you press the chat room button, it'll take you into the chat room. And at that point in time, not only are you listening to the show, but you can communicate with us as well. So certainly give us an opportunity and give us a call really at any time that you so desire, and bring in 732 in. Give us a call. I see that we do have a call in here from an area code 732. That may be Todd calling in on another phone.
Let's see.
Well, you still pop it up a little bit, but we're okay.
I don't know what the deal is.
He
is firing against me.
They must have found the dissenting vote from that to those that were declaring you were innocently considered flag today. I was voted upon and had a fun breaking news. So anyway, I'm back.
Oh, good. I was telling people while you were gone of, the phone number and how they can get involved. And just like you are calling in yourself, they can call in at 646-929-1020, and I can see that. We don't actually have to be tapped into the phone system as we have done in the past. But right now what I'm doing is I've got a direct tap through the Internet into the studio, and then we're broadcasting out through Blog Talk Radio that way. I know that you probably didn't want to go that deeply into electronics, but that's primarily how we're getting out onto the air. And you can get involved in the conversation by giving us a call at 646-929-1020. Or again, as I mentioned, you can go to the chat room, and that is at blogtalkradio.com/money_matters. And I can read your comments there, or I can read your questions there, and we'll deal with them accordingly. So.
So, Rich, what would you say some of the valuable tools or tips or behavior to ensure that if something ever comes up how to deal with, how do you attack it and eliminate it? We're trying to make this show about the
Yeah, I think that there's been certainly several things that I have done in the past. All of us at one portion of time or not have struggled with finances, and maybe that is either due to our control or not due to our control, but we have struggled with finances from at one period of time or another. I will tell you that it is a way of managing your debt load, and the first thing that you need to really take a look at is as we've mentioned in the show in the past, place things into categories, the categories of the things that you must have in order to survive, and then there are things that you need to have, and then there are just all these like things. I would like to have it, but they're not necessities, and you really don't need them, to be honest. I will tell you that, like the Maslow's pyramid or Maslow's hierarchy, that food, clothing, shelter are going to be the three most important things that you're going to need in order to survive. So in any society, it doesn't make any difference if you're listening to this in the United States or if you're listening to this in the heart of Africa or in Asia or some other island in the middle of the Pacific. You need to have a form of shelter so that you can get out of the elements and make yourself feel comfortable, whether it's the elements are cold or hot. You can at least warm yourself up or cool yourself down. And you need to have some way of feeding yourself because, being living, breathing human beings, the very first thing that we need is water. And we can't go very long without water, although we can go for a period of time without food. So one could survive a period of time, 5-10 days without food, but you cannot survive without water. So you're going to have to find a source of water, and you're going to have something to do. Now, if you're living in a civilized society, then certainly shelter is available to you, but that shelter comes at a cost. So you want to be able to manage that shelter versus the income that you are making, and make sure that you're not overspending in that area, and that's chewing into something else. And you want to have enough income to cover food. So you've covered the basic necessities of food and shelter and clothing so that you have clothes to wear to your job, your place of employment, your work, whatever it might be. And after that, you'll probably take a look at your transportation costs from the standpoint of getting to and from work, and also the utility costs that will take place in order to make you survive at home, either cool it down or warm it up or have the light on or have the gas going on the range so that you can cook something, have the water come out of the faucet when you turn it on. Those types of things are the basic necessities of life. And if you're able to cover those and have money left over and you can put some money in the savings account, that's really all you need. Having a lot of electronics, having a big TV, hooked into a cable system that has 250 million channels on it, not a total necessity. If I have a library card, I can go to the library, check out a very good book, and entertain myself for a few days while I read. You know, there's all kinds of ways to enjoy life without having a giant entertainment center. That is not a necessity of life.
You know, it doesn't matter where you are on the economic spectrum, you're always going to have those needs. So whether you're making minimum wage, whether you're making $40,000 a year, whether you're making $140,000 a year, or you make $1 million a year, you're always going to have housing costs. Ideally, your housing costs are never going to be more than a portion of your income. Generally, in ratio, people spend right around a third. And the federal government would say
31% of your take-home pay or out of your monthly income would go toward your housing. So if you're making minimum wage, it's going to be very different than if you're making $1 zillion. But ideally, it's all still in ratio so that you've got other money left over at the end of the month in your budget to cover your utilities, your food, your transportation, your medical. And ideally, you've got enough money to cover all the other wants, not just needs, but wants and things that make life full for you. So whether that's clothing, whether that's entertainment or travel, whether that's business, starting a business, whether these are your financial goals. And we've talked about some of the goals, such as, you know, building up emergency savings, starting retirement savings, saving up to go to school, and so on and so forth. There's so many worthwhile goals to be saving toward. And generally, we sabotage those goals because what takes priority, what takes precedence is the fun stuff, the wants. And it's so easy to blow through all of your money and then some. And what happens is we've become such an instant gratification society that we throw our dollars to the things that make us happy today. And when we do that, we oftentimes outstrip the power of our budget. And it's not a matter of we've just spent all the money that was meant to be used for the rest of this month, but we've now borrowed in the next month. And this is when you start leveraging your lifestyle, and you'll generally borrow through means such as credit cards or personal loans. And that's what starts the cycle of debt. So you hit it on the head. I mean, the first way to attack debt is not to accumulate in the first place, and you do that by living at or below your means. I know that sounds like a tailor-made success story to live a boring life. It doesn't mean it's boring. It just means it's living within context of your income and your own personal financial capability. There's nothing wrong with having an ordinary taste unless you only have a Walmart budget, at which point you figure out what your needs are and you still get them, but you get them at the affordability quotient. And you don't just say, well, other people shop at these places, or other people travel first class and take long trips, or other people drive really expensive cars, so I need to as well.
because you don't know what other people make. You don't know what their budget is. You don't know what their debts are. And so oftentimes we think of the people that we compare ourselves to. And if you follow the old Keeping Up with the Joneses, or I guess today it's more like Keeping Up with the Kardashians, you focus on all the things you see, the experiences they share, and you see this image of, wow, this is what it means to be successful or popular or having fun. What you don't see is their credit card statement at the end of the month. You don't see the stress or worry every time a collector calls them on the phone. You don't see the stress in their face wondering, will this purchase go through, or is it going to be another decline? Or are they going to have their card cut up? You don't see that. You just see all the stuff that they have, and what does it make you want to do? It makes you want to have the very same stuff yourself. But don't get caught up in the trap. The best way to avoid debt and of getting out of debt is not to get into it in the first place.
Very, very true. And I think that, you know, the key phrase that I pick up here is, if you don't want to be in debt, you know, don't get yourself in debt in the first place, and just be able to manage your money very, very well. And it's an important thing that Todd mentioned to all of us, and all of us need to remember that. I was relaying to some of the things that, in fact, I was talking with my daughter not too long ago. She, as many people that have listened to the show, travels around the world quite a bit, so she sees all kinds of things, and she has to manage her money wisely as well. And one of the ways that she manages her money wisely is to make sure that she has funds in separate accounts, and one of the accounts is her account where she can use her debit card when she is here in the United States or overseas. I did ask her at one time, would she prefer to also have a credit card, and her comment was pretty interesting to me. She said, credit cards scare me. I thought that was an interesting statement from someone that travels so much and stays in hotels and such, although she doesn't spend a lot of money on what I would call getting a car. She doesn't rent a car. She uses mass transit for the most of the time, either the trains or the buses or the rails or Uber or cabs or whatever it might be. So she pays again with her debit card to get a monthly pass for traveling around the tube over in England or wherever she might be. So she manages from a cash standpoint, and I think that that's for her at 25, great, because the better that she can manage her money while she is a 25-year-old in operating on a cash mode, she will be able at some point in time to take on a load of credit, knowing that the monthly payments that are made back to restore the credit is fairly easy and to manage, and she can manage that well herself. So I think that is certainly one way that we can keep going.
So Rick, when people come, and you know I've been with three different credit account agencies the last 15 years. So when somebody comes, whether it's into a credit union, talk to a counselor there, they talk to a nonprofit credit counselor or a budget counselor, like in Navicor Solutions, which we take people from all across the country, and our budget and credit counselor is free. We'll generally look and ask them what's going on in their lives when it comes to talking about debt. Somebody will say, well, I'd like to get out of my debt. Well, first thing we'll do is we'll say, well, what's the debt from? Did you go through a life event? Did you go through a divorce or a job loss or a medical catastrophe? So is that more situational debt, or is it more about behavioral spending and somebody always outstripping resources? It may just be a couple $100 a month that become $3,000 a year, and 5 years with interest, they look and they say, I don't know how I got to $20,000 in debt because I don't live extravagantly and I didn't have bad things happen to me. What where did I go wrong? So we try to identify what were the reasons expenses. We've discussed. We'll go through a full budget and look at their needs, look at their wants. We'll say, what's the income? What's the outgo? Something very simple that people don't do on a monthly basis. And we'll see. See, if you can't afford your payments this month for your base living needs, the last thing you need to do is, you know, how do I deal with credit card debt? How do I deal with those balances over there? You need to deal with this month's obligation because you can't chase out of that circle. So we want to make sure that they have a plan where they can live within their means on a monthly basis. Sometimes people will say they spend way more than they bring in, and we make them look at it and say, well, this is not for us to decide, but these are your choices. You need to figure out how to live within your means. And that sometimes results in people cutting back their cable or drinking Starbucks less often, eating out less, or doing rentals of movies from the library rather than from Netflix or Redbox or going out to the movies. Whatever. For some people, it's very significant cuts, and they may realize that as they've changed income, they can no longer afford living in the community that they do. Maybe they should cover the mortgage, but not the taxes and the insurance and the maintenance of a home they're in. Maybe their car is way too expensive for their income at this point. So we present options and say these are your choices. But let's say somebody's they've made up their budget. They're not just living within their means, but they've got money left over that could be used toward debts. And so assuming they've got a means of paying on their debt, at a credit counseling agency like Navicor, we would always say, what are the steps you can do on your own to pay down your debts? So we're not talking about bankruptcy. We're not talking about debt settlement or negotiation. We're not talking about repayment plans or debt management plans. We're saying, if you just do this on your own, here are the steps. And so we would generally go through a matrix of saying, let's look at pull your credit report to verify all the debts that are up, and we'll see what their interest rates are and say, all right, this is your monthly payment. If you stay with this monthly payment, this is how long it will take you to pay off each debt. And generally, next to the Credit Card Act, there's something on each statement known as a humor box, known for the congressional representative who said this should be a consumer protection. People should know that if they're making minimum payments, it's going to take them 18 years or whatever it would be based on your interest to pay this off. So we'll say, if you're making minimums, how long is this going to be to pay off? Nobody should ever suffer from minimum payment syndrome. We would much rather them take an aggressive approach to eradicating their debt. And ideally, whatever plan you put into play, it's not going to take you longer than 3 to 5 years to pay off, because it's generally not going to be reasonable to dial back to expenses or live below your means. Ramen noodles for a month is one thing, 5 years. Okay, interesting. Although maybe before that, for my waist, because I've been, forget adding debt, I've been adding a lot of extra weight as I've been on the road. But we look at these things, and we say, how much money do you put towards these? Well, it's just aggregated, so okay, this is how much it's going to hold this on to our interest. Generally, as a credit counselor, we might put a credit limit at a level from a FICO score, good, bull, or poor, and to tell you, to ask for some tips on your interest. And yeah, people, how to call up on your service. I'm in an 800 FICO score, it's got me at 17%, and I'm getting teachers every week for 0% per year. Would you reduce my interest rates? And if not, I'm going to do a balance transfer, open up another line, and ship out of service. But it means you've got leverage. If you've got a 550 FICO score, and you try this, you're going to say, go ahead, we'd love to close your account with the balance in place, and you can take your business elsewhere, and you'll say, oh, I really can't get access to credit elsewhere. So you reduce the amount of money.
there's generally two flows of thought when it comes to debt reduction or taxes. So Rick Young, in my early years in India, I spent with the next couple hours talking about a huge component of the laddering system. And the laddering system is super simple. It goes like this. You lay out all of your debts. We're talking about tax here. We're talking about credit card debts right now. We're talking about the mortgage car. We're talking about the ones that don't report on a monthly basis. You lay them all out and lay them not based on your balance, but on interest rates. The highest interest rates, the lowest interest rates. And the reason you want to do this is the highest interest rate management is the student loan. This is kind of like saying when you're in triage, what's the biggest problem in here? You may have a credit deficit of 8%, 15%, 19%, and you've got a 27% limit. So that's 10% more than several cards together. So that's the one that I would say, you're going to be minimum payment on every three cards for all the extra money you go for that 70% limit. And you pay payment after payment, month after month. At which point, you would make minimum payments on all the other cards, and you go to the second tax state, and you do the 2% one. You throw all the extra money to it. And each time you pay one off, you just climb one rung down the ladder. And so you can't get your credit cards, you've climbed off the ladder, and you're now on stable financial balance. So it's pretty easy. The reason why people should do this is it is the fastest and cheapest way to pay off the debt. Now let me start again. That is the fastest and cheapest way to pay off your debt. Outside of writing a check and saying, I don't have to be in the money. But if you could do that, you're not working with your cash, right? So why would there be an intention in meeting some of the shelves? Well, Dave Ramsey, another medium mogul financial consultant, the essential idea is Cerebral is trying to create momentum in knocking at your debt. And realizing that beyond the twist, there is sometimes a psychological boost somebody gets from being successful that makes them push their being a further success and not the top. And I'll say it like this. The fact of the matter is, I can tell you, I've been on many diets over the years. If I lose 8 pounds in the first 2 weeks, I love this diet. And guess what? Week three and week four, I'm sticking with it. If in the first 2 weeks of the diet, I lose maybe 0.5 pound, and I feel like I'm suffering all the time, it's probably not going to work for me. So the same thing works for debt repayment. And if somebody's throwing a bunch of money towards the high interest rate cards, and everything else, if they just don't feel the difference, it's not going down fast enough, I'm not taking progress, take it up. And then they start stretching and stretching again, and they're not only not getting out of debt, but they're making the problem worse. But there's a simple method. It's not trying to finish all debt. It's not how much or little the interest rate is, but it's simply a matter of saying, fuck it out. I had 16 credit cards, and after 3 months, I'm counting, so 14. Well, you could say, I've got that 1/7 of my debt. Not 1/7 of my interest rate, but 1/7 of my credit. You're gone. And now it's easier to manage. So 14 is easier than 16, and then 12 will be easier than 13. So on and so forth. So the snowball method that Dave Ramsey promotes is not based on interest rate. You lay out your debts, but instead this time, you first get them from the lowest balance to highest balance. That's the difference. The first balance and highest interest rate to first interest rate, just having them both balance to highest balance. And you make money to every balance. I love that they can understand the highest debt. If you don't, you're going to probably trigger late fees or penalties or any carries on credit. This also protects your interest rates, not just there, but potentially on your other cards as well. So you always have to make things, but here you're going to knock out all your recommended your sleep is low, balanced, and this time you'll be filling a 5-hour gas card, a $1,500 credit bill card, and 3 cards of $5 each for a monthly purchase. So in this case, I said, well, let's not have that gas card early on, because you can go from 5 deaths to 4 deaths. You feel good about it. You feel so good about it, then you keep on performing. And putting it out there, it's really good guidance. And for some people, I know that. That's a big one. I need that. It makes you feel better. So if this is you, and you say, I need to feel some early wins and able to tackle the debt and to get rid of debt, then you do it. There's no one way to get into that. There's no one way you can get out of that. There's lots of different problems. And there's harder to do. People will say, hot months, I want to put toward this problem, and any month I want to put toward that one. Just so I can see progress action. You can do whatever you want. You're going to be successful, have a good quality. And then at the same time, we're trying to whittle down your expenses and say, how can I save and keep every month? That's what you need to save time. And that's so valuable. So we see people say, how can I do a mortgage out of I say, well, that's easy. I end up making bi-monthly payments every 2 weeks, and then depending on the payment amount. It's amazing how much faster it's got forward. Well, what you're doing is you're doing the 50 payments a month rather than 12. The 50 payments a year rather than 12. The extra money goes to the principal, and you've got less of a balance that you're accruing interest on. So it's a debt buster. It's a great thing. So if you've got other debts, same thing. It's how can I make the next payment? And I want to make sure. I'm going to tell you, based on your agreement, that the extra payment goes to your principal. You're not prepaying, it's just decision on it. So you're paying extra on the principal to ask the bond factor to pay off the whole and to put it across the carriage if you're not cheap as well.
Very true. And I think that a lot of people have seen that, certainly with even their homes. You know, the home is probably one of the biggest debts that anybody is ever going to get involved in. And when they have that type of debt, sometimes they don't pay down enough to avoid being underwater. And you have to rationalize out the situation when you're going to purchase a home. I've talked with a lot of people in the past about their home situation and what their what's going on with their home situation, and some of them have said for example in the North Texas area where housing prices are escalating pretty rapidly that people are going to be taking out loans at some point in time, and then in the future they could very easily get into a position where they are underwater, basically meaning that they owe more on their home than the value that their home is worth. And that is certainly always a possibility for people that when they purchase a home, so one has to be very careful when they sign those documents. Some of the ways when talking with the real estate agents, in order to avoid some of that situation, the first thing that you want to do when you're taking a look at the home is realize how much of a home that you can actually realistically afford. There may be homes that you are very attractive to. I can tell you when I was out home shopping, this certainly wasn't recently, but when I was out home shopping, there were homes that I was very attracted to, but, you know, when you look at the price that you're going to have to pay for the home, you begin to realize very rapidly that there is no way that you're going to be able to sustain living in that home and paying the mortgage and the utilities, and also at the same time the property taxes and the upkeep of that facility so that it keeps a good market value. So look at things that you realistically know that from a budget standpoint, you're not going to be spending more than 30% of your take-home pay on the the mortgage of that home and maintenance of that home. In that way, you're keeping a very tight handle on the amount of money that you are willing to spend on a home. Certainly, we all hope that our home prices increase over a period of time. And then maybe when we want to go on to home number two, we can sell our home, pay off the mortgage that is on the home, have additional cash left over called equity. I can take that equity, then invest that into a new home, pay that down significantly so I don't have to take out a big mortgage on it and be able to jump into that and handle the upkeep, the maintenance, the property taxes, the utilities on that new home. And certainly that's one way of stepping yourself through all of the different types of mortgages and homes that they are and through life. But I will say that from, say, in an area of the country where home prices are escalating rapidly, and sometimes I see people paying premiums to buy a home. Literally, a home will sell or a home will be appraised, not assessed, but appraised at, say, $200,000. I'm just going to use a wrong number, but $200,000. And they know they're going to get into a bidding war because there's a lot of people looking for homes in this particular area. And so they're willing to pay a 10% premium on that home. And so they're going to pay $220,000 for a home that has been appraised at $200,000. Now, when you go into the lender, they aren't going to take a look at that you bought the home at a premium. They aren't going to look at $220,000. They're going to look at what the home was appraised for, and that's $200,000. And then they're going to require you to put something down. Now, if you want the best rate possible and your credit is really good, then let's just assume that your credit is really good. If you want the best rate possible, you're going to put a significant amount of money down, somewhere between 10 and 20%. It used to be that when you bought homes, you paid 20% down. There was no 5% down or zero down. Those loans just simply did not exist. And there are homes that are selling today that you put 5% down or 3% down. And I can tell you the less amount of money that you put down on a home, the greater the risk is going to be that you will be underwater at some point in time if the housing market tapers off and the price on the homes come down. Homes are not typically refurbished from top to bottom every year, so they don't stay in their pristine condition. They don't stay in a pristine condition in your entire neighborhood. And so over a period of time, it is very likely that homes will not only appreciate, but also that the prices will depreciate at some point in time as well. And you want to make sure that when you determine that you're going to buy a home, you're buying it smartly, and therefore you're putting enough down that you know that you're taking that home, the actual what you owe on the mortgage, down low enough that even if the price of the home was to shrink and depress a little bit because of, let's just say, economic reasons causing it to shrink a little bit, just because it shrinks a little bit, you will still be above water and breathing air and not drowning in that debt. Where I have seen people get into trouble is when they pay that premium, let's say $220,000, and then they go in and they decide what they need to do is be able to take a first mortgage, and maybe that first mortgage is given to them at $190,000. Well, they've got to have $30,000 in cash, and if they don't have $30,000 in cash, what I have seen people do is they go out and leverage something to get that additional $30,000, and that is a kiss of death in the housing market. Those individuals that do that will be in that bucket at some point in time. Certainly their bet is the housing prices are going to go up. I'll be able to recover my position. I'll pay off that $30,000. I'll be in a better, I'll get more money. I'll have a bigger job. All this stuff goes through their mind when they sign that document. And if you're not able to afford it now, don't plan for 5 and 10 years down the road that you're going to be able to afford it then. Plan for it now because you have that in control. And then just manage well for the next 5 years, and you very well could put yourself into a position of betterment 5 years from now, even if the economy chokes back some, you switch jobs and you end up earning less, the economy takes a dip, housing in your area begins to decay a little bit, so the values are depressed, all those types of things you need to take into consideration.
You know, Rick, one other thing with the housing debt is just because the financial institution approves you for a certain dollar amount does not mean that's what you should spend. It's always awesome. The more you spend on a house, generally the more amenities you'll get. And if you're looking within, comparing two apples to apples, oranges to oranges, within a subdivision, the higher price points are because it's higher amenities, there's better features. And of course, you want to be smart as you're shopping around it. There's values. But if in the back of your mind you say, I'd like to spend $250,000 on a house, but then you go to a lender and they say, we'll approve you for $500,000. And you may think, well, this is a big investment. Just what you said, ideally, property values go up over time. They didn't during the recession. People fell upside down underwater. But historically, a house is a good investment, and it would generally retain value if not building additional equity. So somebody may say, well, it's an investment, so we'll spend extra money. No, you're buying a bigger house because you want to have a nicer lifestyle. But they feel like that's a green light. They wouldn't lend it to me if they didn't think I would be successful in making payments every month. That is not always the case. We saw that as part of the leading cause of the housing crisis is lending people without regard to their ability to pay. Per the Dodd-Frank Act and regulations, there's been a focus on lenders looking at borrowers' ability to pay and to be successful with the product. But before, it would just be, let's lend them as much money as they want. And once that's the case, they'll unhook for it. If they can't, we'll foreclose on them. They can't, they'll be filing bankruptcy. But we'll have closed the loan, we'll have closed them. I want you to do this by visiting a HUD-approved housing counseling agency. I can have a course solution, but go to HUD.gov, you find a local agency, or you can do it over the phone. Talk with somebody about what they think is affordable for you. But most importantly, you come up with what you think is affordable. Long before you go to a lender, they say, oh, you can get a lot more money. I would rather you say, I need to buy a house for $250,000. So they feel comfortable carrying that on a monthly basis. And at that point, you look around for loans at that amount. And you don't go above, you can qualify it. You want to get what you're going to feel comfortable with. Because there's an old saying, the old adage of the swan factor. And swan spells sleep well at night. And there are too many people, even in my neighborhood, in Collingtown, they don't sleep well at night because they've got a larger-than-life mortgage payment. And it terrifies them what would happen if they didn't make one more commission or they couldn't keep up the house payment. What would happen if they started from behind or they just lost? Don't put yourself there. Don't become.
Well, certainly we thank everyone for joining us today on Your Money, Your Matters, broadcast over Blog Talk Radio, and brought to you by Cornerstone Credit Union League, Cornerstone Credit Union Foundation, and Evercore Solutions. And we certainly have been enjoyed talking with you. We hope that you enjoy your Tuesday and the rest of the week, and we will talk to you in 1 week on Your Money, Your Matters. Thank you.
Thank you.